Okay, good morning. Let's see. So the plan for today is to continue with integrable functions. And what I'd like to get started on is getting a little bit more of a grasp of which functions are integrable. Okay, so in Math 21, of course, you figured out some that you could actually integrate, which is a pretty small list, but we're going to find that a lot of them at least have integrals, even if there's no way to get a formula for them. So that's what we'll be focusing on. Let me just start with a couple of theorems, and then we'll do some examples and sort of work backward to indicate how to get those proofs. So the first one is that we have a bunch of integrable functions, which are the continuous functions. So if we have an integral, an interval AB, then the continuous functions on AB are also Riemann integrable. Okay, so we've seen some Riemann integrable functions that were not continuous. But at least these ones are. So we have a lot of functions that are continuous. And this is actually a step towards something that we have asserted earlier, but we have still to prove, but it will come later. So this is a step toward the fact that we'll prove later that continuous functions are derivatives. Okay, that's just a hint of where that's one of the places that gets used. Another fact that follows from this, and this one I guess we'll prove next week. So I indicated that we're looking always for Banach spaces where we can get good control and take limits and understand more functions that way. And this is getting toward one, though it's not. And this is, however, how close we are right now. If we write the L1 norms, this is a new norm for us, as the integral of our function, the integral of its absolute value. Okay, so that's some sort of bigness that we can measure. It's the area under between the axis and our curve, and that's the L1 norm. Then if I consider just the continuous functions with this norm, then this is a space that's close to the sort of thing we want. This is a norm linear space. But it's not Banach. And I'm going to prove that next week, but do people remember what we would need to prove? So recall this would require do you remember what you would have to prove there? Okay, so let me just listen. So I claim that there, you need three things to see that it's a norm linear space. And then you'll need one to show that it's not Banach. Okay. So what do we need to show that something is a norm linear space? So one thing we'll need is that if the integral of the absolute value is zero, then the function itself is zero. We just found that that's not true if we take all functions. But if we restrict to continuous functions, then it could still be true. Okay, and that's and I claim that it is. So if f is continuous, And the integral of the absolute value of f is zero, then f is zero. So that's one thing you'd need. Another thing you'll need is that the integral of a constant times the absolute value of f is just the absolute value of that constant times the integral of the absolute value. All right, and then the third thing you'll need is that the integral of a absolute value of a sum so the triangle inequality, so that's less than or equal to the integral of the absolute value of f plus the integral of the absolute value of g. Okay, and actually, can anyone guess which of these is going to be the trickiest one to prove? So what about this middle one here? Is that one going to be hard to prove? So remember the definition of the integral that we gave. It was just this sum of suprema or infima. No? Okay. Well, you can think about that. So we'll do some examples in a bit, and then you can try to figure out which one will be tricky. As I said, we'll prove it next week. So then the final thing we'll need to prove is we'll need to find a sequence which is Cauchy but not convergent. Okay, and let me just give an example of that. So e.g., f sub n of x is equal to, I'll just give a graph. So let me just work from 0 to 1, and I'll take the maximum value being 1 here, and I'll just take this function that goes over to 1 minus 1 over n, and then is linear up to that function. Okay, so you can try to check that that is a sequence of functions, which is L1 Cauchy, but not L1 convergent. Okay, so that's what we will need. We'll do that next week. All right, but what I want to do today is this theorem here that the continuous function, well, this is 11.28, that the continuous functions are Riemann integrable. Okay, and so the approach to doing that is the so-called Cauchy criterion. So let me write that down. So approach to the proof of to proving this 11.28 as the Cauchy criterion. And so let me just write those down. First of all, I'm going to come up with three different ways of characterizing the Riemann integrable function. So one of these is the definition, and then I'll have two others that are sometimes convenient. All right, so let me just write those three down. So first of all, there's the definition. Okay, and that said that the Riemann integrable functions on AB, so this, as I said, is the definition. These are just the set of all bounded functions. Okay, so that the upper integral is equal to the lower integral. Right, that was our definition. All right, and so now we're going to have two other ways of characterizing this. So this is equals, and this is theorem 11.23. Okay, so that says that this is the set of all bounded functions, just like before. Okay, but now our criterion is going to look a little bit more like one of our continuous sets of criteria. It said for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists a partition, a piece of epsilon, and the difference between U and L on that partition is less than epsilon. Okay. So we can find some partition that characterizes it. And another way to phrase it, which is similar, but sometimes a more handy way to write it, and is listed separately, is theorem 11.26. Again, it's going to be bounded functions. But now what we're just going to find is just some sequence of partitions that have a good property, and it's the same property. So there exists some sequence of partitions. So Q sub n and a natural number, so a sequence, and Qn is a partition. And then we want the same thing. So with the limit, as n goes to infinity, of the difference between U and L going to zero. So U of F using this Qn minus L of F using this Qn. That goes to zero. It's a little cramped down there, but I hope you can read it. Okay. Okay. All right, so those are the Cauchy criteria. And let me just give you a chance to try a few examples just to get a little bit of a feel for how these work. So Cauchy criteria examples. All right, so let's consider the following partitions, the same partitions we looked at before. These are the most common ones to use. So consider, let me call it the R sub M, partition of 0, 1. And it'll be just the same ones that we looked at last time. So they'll just be evenly spaced with length 1 over M. So it's going to be the set 0, 1 over M, 2 over M, etc. Okay, so it's evenly spaced. Okay, and then let's just compute some of these things find this U of F with this partition minus L of F with this partition for a collection of different functions. And so let me just start with the one that we did last time, just so it's clear what we're doing here, and then I'll give you a few to try yourselves. So let's take f of x equals x. So this is from last time. Okay, and so we computed last time, we found that u of f x, does anyone remember what the difference between u and l was for this one? So we computed these precisely, and they were 1/2 plus 1 over 2m and 1/2 minus 1 over 2m were the two estimates. And so the difference between those is just 1 over m. Okay, and so this goes to 0 as m goes to infinity. Okay, so by the Cauchy criterion, this f of x equals x is Riemann integrable. And I guess this is on the interval 0, 1. Okay, so I hope that's clear. Let me just give you a few examples to try for yourselves. And I'll put you in breakout rooms to try that. So let's try the following. So let's take some characteristic functions. So let me start with f of x equals, let me use this notation and then I'll write out what it means. But the characteristic function of the singleton 1, this just means that it's either 1 or 0. That's what characteristic functions are. It's just a handy notation. And it's 1 if x is equal to 1. And it's 0 if x is something else. Okay. And then number 3, let's try f of x equals the characteristic function of 1/2 to 1. Which just means, again, it's either 0 or 1. And it's 1 if x is bigger than or equal to 1/2. And 0 if x is less than 1/2. Okay, and for the fourth one, let's look at f of x equals the characteristic function of the rational numbers, which we talked about last time. So this is 1 if x is rational, and 0 if otherwise. Okay, so those are 3 examples. Let me just give you a few minutes to try to compute. And again, what I want you to do is to compute these differences, right? So for each m, right, we have a partition, right, associated to that m, and it's just the even partition. And I want you to compute the u minus the l for each of these 3 functions, okay? And so that will either they can, and then we can see whether they converge to 0 or not. So that would be a test of whether we found a proof that they are integrable. And let's just try that. Okay, all right, let's see. So did the people manage to figure out the answers to these? All right, I guess I already did one. So let's start with two here. So so did anyone figure out for two? So this is the function that's just one here at the end and otherwise zero. Yeah, okay, I see someone has found it. So in the chat, it's 1 over n. Okay, all right, apparently everyone didn't get that, so why not? So let's see, let's try to figure it out. So what we've got is our function here, which is just one there, and we've divided our region up into m pieces here. And if we look at the maximum for most of these, it's zero, except this last one where the maximum is one, okay? So the U part is gonna give us the area of this rectangle here, which is one over M, right? And the L part is gonna be zero on all of these. So that one's gonna be minus zero. So the U minus L is going to be 1 over M minus 0. So it's going to be 1 over M. Okay, so not sure what was unclear about that one. So but in any case, in this case, U of F with our M here is going to be a 0 plus 0 plus et cetera. And then the last term is going to be 1 over m. And the L of F with this Rm is going to be all zeros. Right? And they're m terms. Okay, so when I sum up all those pieces, that's what I'm getting. Okay, so then the difference, which is what was asked for, is Neil got there is a 1 over M. So it's a lot of notation, so maybe people are getting lost in it. I didn't have any questions about that one. Okay, all right, so then what about the next one? So if we're looking at this function that's one for the second half and zero for the first half. Okay, and I chop it up into m pieces again. What are the possible values for the maximum and minimum value inside of each of those intervals? Yeah, that's right. Those are the possible values for the areas of each of these rectangles. That's right. Either they're one over m if we're over here, or they're zero, right? Because it's either the maximum is either one or zero, and then similarly the minimum is always either one or zero. So those are the two possibilities for each of these terms, and if we write out all the terms, then we have u f r m rm. And like you said there, it's going to be either one over m or zero. It's going to be zero for a while. And then at some point, it's going to switch to one over m. Right? And similarly for l, okay, so then the only question is how many of each of those are there? So is it clear? So how many of those are zeros and how many are m, are one over m's? Right, there's always a total of m terms. And we're looking at this function, right? And we've chopped up our interval. And so some of these are one over m, and some of them are just zero. Well, let's try a few of them. So so let's look at the case m equals say 3. So four. So if we have a u f r four, so there'll be four terms, right? And if I look at those four terms, what are they going to be for the u? So here's my function. Okay, and I've split my domain into these four intervals. 1 over 4, 1 half, and 3 quarters are the split parts. So if I look at the u, how many of those are 0 and how many are 1 over 4? Right, so it's going to be the first one is going to be a zero, right? And then the next one, well, actually, this is the highest point, so it's going to be up here, right? And then the next two are also up there. So it's going to be a zero plus 1/4 plus 1/4 plus 1/4. And what about the L? So now we're looking not for the maximum, but for the minimum value. Right, so then the first two both have a minimum of 0 and the last two both have a minimum of 1. So that's gonna be 0 plus 0 plus 1/4 plus 1/4. Okay. And what about for 5? So again, we have 5 numbers, right? Some of them are going to be zeros and some of them are going to be 1/5. Is it clear how many of each we have for the two cases? So for you, I claim that the first two are both going to be zero, and then we'll have three that are not. That's right. That's what I'm seeing here. So that's what I'm getting is that we'll have the first two are entirely contained in the first half, and therefore they're both zero. And then the last three. Hit the top. Okay, and that middle one has both zeros and ones. So the minimum value is zero and the maximum value is one. Yeah, that's the right answer. The difference is one over m, and it's just a question of where that one half falls, which interval it's in, right? It's in one of them, and so that's going to be one. Yeah. So you can keep computing, but you'll get that the difference is going to be u of frm minus l of frm is equal to 1 over m. Okay, which once again goes to 0. So once again, this is an integrable function. Functions, since the limit as m goes to infinity of 1 over m is equal to 0, which is the criterion from the Cauchy criterion. Okay, what about this last one, number 4? So this is this bizarre function, right? It's one at all the rationals and zero at all the non-rational numbers. And so I chop my interval up into m equal pieces. So that's my Rm. Yes, there's a rational in every single M. That's correct. So what does that make U and L equal to? That's exactly the important observation, is that there's a rational in every single one. So the maximum value. So the maximum value is always one, right? Because there's always a rational in there. Okay, and if the maximum value is one, then what is that sum going to be? Well, it's just going to be one over m for each one. And there are m of them, so it's going to be one, right? And what's the minimum value inside of each of those intervals? Right, because there's always an irrational number as well, right? And so it's zero plus zero. So in this case, we have u of f rm minus l of f rm equals one, and the limit of one is not zero. Okay, so we did not manage to show that this was a integrable function, and in fact, it is not, okay? Which we saw last time. Okay, any questions about this definition? So this is, I mean, it's a lot of notation, keeping track of all these little intervals and whatnot, but I hope that these examples were clear, are now clear at least. Any questions? Okay, then let me prove a couple of facts then about these functions. And so the I want to prove 11.28, making use of this Cauchy criterion. So a proof of and let me see, let me use the first Cauchy criterion, 11.23. Okay, so here's this criterion here, that for every epsilon, there exists some partition, okay? All right, and so the first thing to do is to remember facts about continuous functions. So recall theorem, I guess it's 7.42, it says that if I have a continuous function on a compact set, then I can do better. Actually, does anyone remember how I can do better? What stronger statement can I make about a continuous function on a compact set? It's not just continuous. Remember, so it's uniformly continuous. Okay, let me just remind you what that means. So recall that a continuous just means for all epsilon greater than zero and x in AB together, then there exists a delta which depends on both this epsilon and the x. Greater than zero, so that whenever I have some y whose difference from x is less than delta, then we have that the value of the function is less than differs by less than epsilon, right? So that's what it means to be continuous. Whereas uniformly continuous allows us to choose this delta without reference to the x. So it says that for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some delta depending only on epsilon, so that whenever I choose any x, the same delta works. Okay. So it's just that order of quantifiers. Okay, and so now I just want to make use of that to prove this theorem. So we will assume that F is uniformly continuous. In the interval AB. And then I want to show that we have a good partition by the and then use this Cauchy criterion. And compute. Let me see, I'm going to take M to be bigger than B minus A divided by the delta that's guaranteed to me by the fact that it's uniformly continuous for the difference epsilon over B minus A, okay? So I'm going to make that choice. I guess I should have said, I'm going to take fix an epsilon, so for all epsilon greater than zero. I'm going to take this M, okay, the one that I've given here, and compute. That if I now take this U minus L, so U of F evaluated along the partition M minus L of F with the same partition, is less than epsilon. Okay, so if I do that, then I'm done, right? So I hope the logic is clear. So I have a continuous function and therefore a uniformly continuous function on AB. Okay, and now for each epsilon, I'm gonna find some partition R, it's gonna be R sub M, this evenly distributed one, where I chose that M depending on this epsilon. Okay, so for each epsilon, I choose a fine enough grid, fine enough M here, that this has enough points in it. And then I compute that the difference between U and L is less than epsilon. Okay, so then I'll be done. I hope everyone's happy with the logic. So that if so, then let me just do the computation. So computing. All right, so the first thing to notice is that if I've broken it up into these pieces, then for this partition, this equal partition, right? This is 0, 1 over m, et cetera. The evenly divided partition, each interval has the same length, right? L sub I, which is just 1 over m, right? Those are the lengths. What did I do wrong here? So my interval goes from A to B, not from 0 to 1. And I took my A and B to be 0 and 1, which I apologize. So let me fix that. So it should go from A to B. And so then I'm going to take B minus A over M plus A. I did the special case. I just wrote down the special case where B and A were 1 and M, but I'm trying to prove it in general. So plus 2 times B minus A over M through B. Sorry, so there's M. And so then this length becomes B minus A over M, right? So I've got my interval here, length B minus A, and I chopped it up into M equal parts. Okay. All right, so that's my length is B minus A over M. And the point is that that's then less than delta epsilon over B minus A, because that's how I chose it, right? That's how I chose my M up here. So this is smaller, that length here is smaller than the delta, okay? Well, so that means that whenever I have 2 points in one of these intervals, if they're inside one of their intervals, then their distance is less than delta. Okay. So that means that because I chose the delta using the fact that it's uniformly continuous, the values of F are less than the subscript there, which is epsilon over B minus A. Okay, because that's how I chose my delta. Okay, in particular, if I take the largest and smallest values, then that still works. So if I take the soup of X in I and evaluate F there, and then subtract the inf of Y in I of F of Y, of course, those are elements of I, and so they satisfy above, and so they're also less than this B minus, epsilon over B minus A. Okay, so then we can just combine this and consider what this U at FRM minus L at FRM means, okay? And so this is just the sum. I equals one to M. Okay, and it's gonna be the length. So that's gonna be the L sub I, but those are all the same, right? And then I'm gonna multiply it by the soup for the U and then subtract off the inf for the L. So it's gonna be the soup of X in I of F of X, which is what we found above, minus the inf of Y in I of F of Y. Okay, but let's see. So now we can combine everything. So this we know is less than epsilon over B minus A, and these Li is exactly B minus A over M, and their M terms. So if I just write it all out, this is a less than or equal to, well, their M terms, okay? And each one is less than, well, the lengths of the Li is B minus A over M, okay? And this difference between the sup and the inf is less than epsilon over B minus A. And I guess it's actually strict. Okay, and so then this is equal to epsilon, we're done. Okay. So each of those differences is small. Okay, let me just prove one more just because they're kind of fun and I have just enough time to do it. And so this is another class of functions that are Riemann integrable. So there are lots more functions that are Riemann integrable. The continuous functions are a useful class, and we will use them, but there are more. And here's another observation. So this is theorem 11.30. And if we take the increasing functions are Riemann integrable. Okay, so proof. So let's say that f is bounded and increasing. So if f is bounded, so those are the ones we look at, and increasing, then let's just compute u of f with this same partition evenly spaced with m parts and subtract off L of F with that same partition, Rm. And we want to get that that's small, okay? And so let's compute it. So so this is equal to, just like before, the sum I equals one to M, the length Li, those are always going to be the same, B minus A over M, right? Because we split it up into M equal parts. And then, now this is where this increasing is really handy. So where's the maximum occur if I'm looking at over this I that goes from II, which is from XI minus one up to XI, and I have this increasing function, at what point does it achieve its maximum value inside of that interval? Is that clear? So if I'm in this interval II, right, it runs from xi minus one up to xi, the maximum is going to be here at the right, and the minimum is going to be here at the left because my function is increasing. Okay, so that's always going to be true. So this is just going to be f of xi for the maximum for the u, and f of xi minus one for the minimum, which is the L. Okay, and so then this is equal to. So the Li's are all B minus A over M, so I can pull those out. And now I just have the sum, but these cancel. So I have F of B minus F of X M minus one plus F of X M minus one minus F of X M minus two plus the same thing, and it just keeps telescoping until I get down to f of a, right? And so the whole thing is just equal to b minus a over m times f of b minus f of a. Okay, and so the only thing that changes as m gets larger is that m, and so that's going to zero, and which approaches zero. As m goes to infinity. Okay, so we're done. All right, so those are two classes of functions that are now Riemann integrable. So remember, in Math 21, finding integrals is really hard, but here we managed to show that there are at least a lot of functions that have integrals, right? So all these continuous functions and also all these increasing functions are at least integrable. Okay, out of time, but I will turn off the recording and stick around.